Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Hugh Flanagan from MRO Construction. Welcome, Hugh.
Thanks very much, Tom. Looking forward to it.
Pleasure to have you. So you've grown MRO Construction up to the state it's in today. So $3.5 million revenue. Let's go back to when you founded the company. How did you get started and what were you trying to build?
So I have been in the industry for 26 years, almost to the date. And I started out building as a laborer, not really knowing anything other than having practical skills. And I loved the industry from the very first day I started. I love the process. I love everything to do with renovation of domestic and now commercial properties as well. I was unfortunate. I was very fortunate to work with my brother for the first 15 years of my career. My brother was 6'7" and a very well-built chap. So if he told me it was Tuesday, then it was Tuesday. So I had a very good mentor. He was a fantastic man. Sadly, we lost him in 2014. And I found myself in a bit of a conundrum. Do I go and work for another company or do I pick up what we've got and take it forward? I rightly or wrongly chose to pick up what we had and take it forward. What I very quickly realized is there was a great difference between running a building site and running a company. Two totally different things. And I found myself firefighting a lot because I was still trying to run a building site whilst running a company. So very shortly after, my wife and I decided to take a sabbatical, moved out to France, bought a chalet, renovated that. Then I started getting more and more calls. I'd already set MRO up as a sort of project management platform, where I would put subcontract teams into my clients' properties. They would build them. I'd oversee it because that played to my skill set. But then by about 2018, I was getting so much work that I couldn't do it from France anymore. We had to come back, which was a blessing because we'd had a baby and bringing a baby up in the mountains, well, as idyllic as it sounds, wasn't that great. So
we moved back. Pause that. So you started it remotely in France.
Yeah.
And then, so how did you get your first client purely remotely? Because this is back 10 or eight years ago, isn't it? So
it was organic. I mean, I started the company in 2015 and we moved to France pretty much straight away. And it took a while because I was renovating a chalet out there. So I was quite glad that I wasn't getting any calls. And I was fending off calls and pushing them to other sources. But they just kept coming. So, you know, as the money was running out on the renovation, I took a job here and a job there, building scopes of works, popping back to England, visit the property, meet people, and then head back out and draw up scopes of works, get drawings done. Again, it just started to escalate, to build job on job, to the point where I had, I think, probably three jobs live and more coming in. I was like, right, okay, we've got to be back in the UK. So we came back. So it was all organic. Everything that happened, all the work that came in organically from the client base that my brother and I had built over the previous 15 years. So it was actually a very easy process. But what I decided to do the project management side of things was great and easy, but that didn't bring in enough revenue for us to survive in London. So I then decided to start doing more maintenance stuff, which I went back on the tools myself, and then got another guy in, then another guy, then another guy. And the whole thing just very slowly, but organically built. And the great thing about it was that I was able to teach myself enough to run a business because I'd started it from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so perhaps you can dive into what the platform does and how it works. I know you said project management for construction, but how does it work, and who are your clients and how do you get paid?
So one of the things I did, I think in 2019, is I split the company out. I had a maintenance, I developed the maintenance company because that side of things was going really well. And I separated out the construction side of the business. So we are still not as organic as we used to be. We do a lot of SEO, and the SEO works fantastically. Took two years to build it, and we did a lot of the SEO work, but now we're getting probably in the region of between 10 and 15 inquiries a week for maintenance and construction stuff. I do a lot of networking now, which I only really discovered a year and a half ago. Networking is fantastic because it's trusted partners. You know, I essentially have, you know, multiple partners who are out selling my wares on a day-to-day basis because I built private relationships with them, and they know people that have restaurants. They know people that have bars, homes, offices, etc. And because we've split out to do commercial and domestic, you know, every single person I know or have met through the networking or my career knows that we can help them, be it personally or professionally.
Yeah. And where do you network?
So I'm in a BNI group, Business Networking International, which I go to every Tuesday morning, very, very early, which is quite painful.
Which one are you part of? Which chapter?
Fortune chapter in Hendon.
Okay. Okay. I was the one in London for a while, but it didn't quite work for me. It wasn't quite the right group but I can see how it would work for a business like yours really well.
Yeah, the Hendon group tend to work more out towards Hertfordshire. So I don't get a huge amount of London-based stuff. Although I do get a little, and I'm considering moving into a London chapter just to pick up more. So I'm also in another one called BGAP with my business coach, and he runs it. And again, there are multiple. It's more of a trades-based networking group, but we all sort of cuddle each other and feed each other bits and pieces here, there. I use them more than they use me, if you like, which works well. And then I'm in another cooperative as well of professional bodies. So engineers, architects, drainage specialists, soil sampling companies, party wall surveyors. So more on the professional side of what I do. But again, we're just feeding work to each other all the time. And that's quite a new group, but we've got our first couple and we all look after the project together. So we see it. It's not like one of them will call me and say, go and do this one. We all do the project together. So we know how each other work and we can sort of usurp issues and pick up on things quickly and easily because we're a team of professional bodies, not just a team of tradesmen.
Mm. And so as you've grown to the state that you're in now, what has been the hardest part, the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome?
There's two things. One is staff, getting the right people. Builders are a particular breed. They're fantastic when they're fantastic. They're awful when they're not.
Yeah.
So getting the right staff and the right management structure, which I'm actually just about to make a huge change to by employing a commercial manager, which I've never employed before. I've just employed an office manager, which I've never employed before. And I'm trying to push out the responsibility at the moment as the project managers that work for me. I've got five project managers, and they all wear so many hats throughout the course of the day that it means that they're not actually getting to do the project management side of stuff well.
Yeah.
So I'm splitting out what they do, and I'm taking some of these hats off them, and building my back office, because, you know, when you're turning over upwards of 3.5, and our projections for next year will probably double that, I need to have a stronger back office, and a stronger commercial outlook on what we're doing. What I discovered last year is that for many, many years, I've been a builder that has a business, and we did pretty well, you know?
Yeah.
But what I need to be is a businessman that owns a building company. And it's only a very slight change of words, yeah, but the psychological shift that has happened within me naturally as a result of understanding this means that I'm becoming far more business orientated and far less builder orientated, which makes me a far greater prospect on commercial projects, and for the bigger domestic projects that I know and love.
Mm. And what you just said there is actually something that I hear very regularly, is that you were essentially, well, you are an expert at what you do, which is building and construction, and you started a business because that was something you were an expert in. And personally, in the process, you become a business owner. And so you have to kind of almost shift and almost forget everything that you learned and actually learn to be a business owner and not a builder.
Yeah. I read a fantastic book by Richard E. Gerber. Is it the E-Myth or the Myth of E? The E-Myth, yeah. And like everyone else, I'm sure, reading this book, I thought, oh my God, this guy is watching me. He's written this book about me. But the thing that I picked up on that was the most significant was the three people in one. You start out your career as a technician. You then become a manager. And then all of a sudden you realize you're an entrepreneur. And all three of these people are fighting each other. These characters are fighting each other within your own brain. And you have to make them all work together, because I'm still a technician in my head when I'm on site and I'm talking to the guys and showing them what I want done and how I want it achieved. I'm a technician, but I'm also a manager because I'm telling them how to do it and what to do. But then I leave site and I go into entrepreneurial mode, of, right, how am I going to spend time on my business, not in my business? And I'm finding the whole thing absolutely fascinating, but I'm just at the infancy stages of becoming a businessman, and it's not my go-to. I'm a practical man, not an academic, and I'm at the age of 49 trying to become more academic. It's a struggle whilst running a business that's effectively 26 years in, and I'm going back to basics.
Yeah.
But from a business perspective, not from a building perspective.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say, what you've said is that the main bottleneck that you see in the business is that you need a stronger commercial outlook on the business.
Yeah.
And so diving into that, so you've got your commercial manager, but what else needs to happen and kind of in the day-to-day, what does that look like for you?
Well, it's the networking. The networking is fantastic for that, because I not only get to meet potential clients everywhere, but I get to meet like-minded people. People that are also doing the same as me. I'm a sole director. I don't have a business partner. I don't have a sounding board other than my business coach, who is fantastic. But, you know, at the end of the day, whilst he is vested in the business because of his personal attachment and contractual obligation, he's not vested in the business, you know? So it's about learning to spend more time on my business and grow it organically, or, you know, force is the wrong word. But I do want to get out there, and I do want to spend more time on meeting people, growing the business from that perspective, getting the systems, the processes and everything. And, you know, eventually turning this into something that has an out, you know, something that that makes it a saleable prospect, you know?
Yeah. And so as you're going through that process, what information do you use to make decisions on?
The meetings that I have with my coach are fantastic because he, as I say, has grown businesses from nothing to something. So his advice is you know, priceless. It's what's already in my head as well, you know, because I've spent 26 years thinking about this, but never had the time or confidence to action it. There's a lot of reading that takes place. There's a lot of talking that takes place. And there's going to be a lot of leaning on my in-house office crew to get me there. You know, there's a lot of ChatGPT. You know, what do I do in this situation? I have another very dear friend who is a very successful coach. She runs a business in America. So she's not my coach, but she works, she runs a company called coaching.com. And she's a fantastic outlet for me because she has taken multi-million pound businesses into multi-billion pound businesses, you know? And, you know, that is a far bigger prospect that I am, that I want to go to be honest. It's not a desire that I have, but the takeoffs from any one of those successful companies are fantastic. And I could pick and choose what elements I choose to bring into my business and what elements I don't, or what ones I think will be beneficial for us. You know, at the end of the day, one of the things I have to keep reminding myself is I've got us here. I built this. And I obviously have a concept of what I'm doing. You know, there's a huge amount of imposter syndrome in any entrepreneur, in any business owner, some more than others, but I speak to a lot of other small business owners, SMEs, and imposter syndrome is huge.
Yeah.
And that's just the psychology. That's, you know, that's something you have to fight against constantly, but, you know, I try not to be an arrogant man. And I do my level best to listen to those around me, but also to listen to myself.
Yeah. And so what's next? What are you looking to achieve? You mentioned doubling revenue over the next, the forecast for the next year or so is double. But beyond that, you mentioned the sale. In a bit more detail, what does that look like for you? Not the sale, but like the time frame and how you're going to get there.
The biggest thing for me in the sort of the tunnel vision that I have towards this prospect is, I call it having a grown-up company, you know, being having an adult company that runs itself and doesn't take my firefighting on a day-to-day basis. It means that I can go away on holiday and actually have a holiday, you know. At the moment, I go away and I cannot take my eye off the business because that's what I've grown up with. But it's to get myself into a place where I get to spend more time with my family, where I get to have a holiday and not open up my computer because I know everything is running the way that it's been built. The systems and the processes are trusted and in place to cope without my constant paranoia that something's going wrong somewhere around the corner. I mean, I think anyone that runs a business, an SME, has this. But it's about over the 12 months, knowing the numbers, having the systems, having the processes that mean I can take a holiday or my colleagues can take a holiday and know that everything is running as it should.
Yeah.
Having a slick running machine, you know, as all these multi-million pound companies do, they have a slick running machine that means that if one of the bricks falls out, the whole building doesn't collapse.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I really appreciate you sharing that. So thanks very much. Anything else you'd like to share?
I think it's the tenacity and respect that I have for SMEs. It's those people out there that are striving to be independent, to push and to never give up. The other thing that I was going to mention, that's the biggest and hardest thing, is getting people to pay their bills. And it's having the confidence to trust in yourself. You built the process, you built the system, you built the business, and to have that confidence to keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
That's the thing that stops me getting out of bed in the morning, but equally gets me out of bed with a spring, on the good days.
Yeah.
So, don't give up, I think, is probably the best thing that I could give to anyone, because I keep going because I love it. And remember that you love it. That's why you opened it and why you did it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for sharing all of that, Hugh. Really appreciate it. So we'll make it very easy for anyone to contact you via LinkedIn and your
Fantastic.
Website.
Fantastic. Thank you.
So anyone who does want to get in touch. Very impressive what you've built, and wishing you all the success on your journey to building that saleable business.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate your time as well.
No worries. Cheers, Hugh.
Take care. Bye now.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.